That's how you do that.
Good afternoon, everybody, and I'd like to call the Health and Human Services Finance Division to order. Let's see, do we have a quorum? Maybe not yet, but we would like to get started because we have a full agenda today. And members, we're going to take the bills a little bit out of order. We're going to, with everybody's indulgence, we're going to allow Representative Noor to present his bill first because he has to be in another committee. So we're going to hear House File 399. And Representative Noor, please come to the table, and we will move the bill as soon as we get a quorum. And one, okay, we now have a quorum. So before we do that, can I get a motion to approve the
minutes? So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton moves to approve the minutes of February 13th. Is there any discussion for the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So Representative Noor is going to move House File 399, that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. So Representative Noor, welcome to the committee. Is this your first bill presentation?
It's the first bill, yes, that
Wonderful.
I have in this committee, yeah. And we have some treats coming around, and we're waiting for the page to bring the napkins.
Okay, well, Representative Noor, that wasn't why I was asking. But,
but I have to make sure that we've got healthy, what do you call it, treats. And,
well, that is wonderful.
We'll get,
thank
yeah.
you. Thank you very but much. But we're, you know, we as members should know this, even though we have had this kind of thing about members bringing treats for the first time. That is not a rule. It is, we will give your bill full consideration. If you don't do that, we probably would, in many cases, we maybe our health would be better if people didn't do it. But thank you for bringing healthy. I really appreciate that.
Appreciate it, Madam Chair.
So please go ahead and present your bill, Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to present the bill, although I was on the last on the agenda. This is House File 399, as the Chair mentioned. This is a bill we would like to lay over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill or the Division Bill. This is a request for resources to fund the foster care program at Hennepin County. As we are all aware of, there is a significant crisis in foster care system. And I was assuming there's also an amendment, which I haven't seen yet, which was supposed to be included today. Do we have that amendment?
Oh, no, Representative Noor, I don't think we have that. Is it a brief amendment?
It's a brief amendment, and I didn't bring the bill with me. The amendment was to include kinship in the foster care program.
Okay, well, Representative Noor, if you do you want to, we can move an oral amendment to put that in if you like, if it's something that's small enough that we can just insert it here. Why don't you tell us, if you can, what the amendment would be.
So the amendment is to add kinship after the foster care program so that we're not only providing resources for the foster care program but also for the kinship program.
Okay, so Representative Noor, you have to give us the line number and the exact word.
It's line,
where it goes.
It's line 1.7. At okay. the end, we will add and kinship. If the House Research can help us get the language correctly.
Okay, so so Representative Noor, what I'm hearing you say is on line 1.7, after the end of the line, after the word foster, to insert the words and kinship. So that would read, and promote family foster and kinship care recruitment models. Is that
That's accurate? My oral amendment, but I just wanted to get the
okay,
House.
And how,
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
That works. Okay, very good. So we can, I think we have to do that as a motion. So Representative Noor is moving that oral amendment. Did everybody get the amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Thank you. The motion prevails, and that is added to the bill. So we took care of that. So, Representative Noor, please go ahead and talk about the bill in the form that you wanted to have it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the members. This is a request to provide resources for the foster care and kinship program to allow Hennepin County to recruit parents and families who will help the children who are in the system. As you're aware, Hennepin County has got the largest number of foster care kids. It's almost 1,700. And we know that the crisis that we're in. So this resource will provide help to recruit parents and families who will take in those kids who are looking for caring parents. So this is one step to include more culturally appropriate services at the county level and allow those kids who bring different cultural background to have access to someone who can really understand them about their background and their needs and be able to serve them well. And I'm here with Commissioner Mike Oppert from Hennepin County, who can provide us more detail about this program.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce
thank
yourself.
Thank you. I had no idea. I've been here a lot of times. I've never been part of any treats sort of thing. So, and I'm not part, I understand. There probably aren't enough to go around, but it's interesting. I don't think we're going to start it on the county board, even though with seven it would be a lot cheaper. And again, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a timely bill to come up today. I am driving here from the Brookdale Library where I chaired our
And I'm sorry, please introduce
I'm sorry, I'm Mike Oppert, Hennepin County Commissioner from District 1.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, I'm coming from our Child Wellbeing Oversight Committee, a group that we've established. It's actually a second-generation committee that concerns itself only with child protection, out-of-home placement, and with seeing to the reform of our system into one that concerns itself with child well-being in addition to child protection. So child well-being being much broader, much more preventive, much more on the front end. And it's made up of community members. It's a very impressive group, if I do say so myself. The Casey Foundation is a member. Their representatives fly in for each meeting, and they add invaluable information to us as we deal with this national crisis of child protection and child well-being. So we are partners in the state. There's this assistant commissioner, Nikki Farrago, sits on that. I hope I didn't promote her or demote her in that. I think that's her title, but she sits with it, as did Jim Koppel before her. And we've been in close alliance with DHS over work to reform foster care and child protection in Hennepin County. We know firsthand that while we're partners with the state, Minnesota has a very low investment, one of the lowest investments in child protection in the country. This leaves a significant burden on counties. In Hennepin County, 2 years ago, we hired more than 100 social workers in one board action. There's never been anything close to that before or since in my time on the board. And we've established the Child Protection Oversight Committee, now the Child Wellbeing Oversight Committee, to look at front-end activities and evaluate all manner of facets of child well-being. Today's meeting, we took up foster care. That's why it's particularly timely. And we spent a lot of time on kinship. And I'm no expert in this, but I guess I've become somewhat of one. We talked about we have researchers that sit on this committee, too, who talked about the fact that if a child is placed with kin, I'll get to that definition in a minute, there is more positive sense of self, there's less conflict, less stress, better mental health, and better education outcomes, as the research data has shown over many years. So what does kin mean? Obviously, intuitively, we would say, well, it's maybe an aunt and an uncle, maybe a grandparent. And the state definition, which is different than other states, goes like this. An individual who is related to the children by blood, marriage, or adoption, or an individual who is an important friend with whom the child has resided or had significant contact. Again, this is the state definition. We at the county level support that. Folks from the Casey Foundation support that. But there are many issues around it, and it's a judgment call many times on the part of our social workers. That's a conversation all by itself. But what I think this bill will help us do, and what I think, if you give yourself a minute, you can appreciate, is if you are an aunt or an uncle and you become the logical person for this foster placement until hopefully mom and dad can get themselves together to have the kid be reunified, you may not have a great relationship or an enduring relationship with the child. You may live in another suburb and see each other maybe only at a holiday or maybe even less frequently than that. And to contemplate the child moving in with you for a significant period of time is a big thing. I mean, where do they sleep? Do they get along with your kids? Do you not have any children? And all of a sudden you're going to be introduced to a fourth grader who has to get to school and medical appointments and maybe some therapy or all manner of other things. And we talked about the fact that we need to appreciate better what we're asking kin to do. We have an entire licensing program that goes to non-relative foster placements. And I think over time we all have just sort of presume that family or kin, even if it's an important family, friend or individual, will just happily take this on and do so without, it'll be seamless and the kid moves in and they're there for 6 weeks or whatever and it all goes easily. And that certainly is not the case. So we talked at great length today about the fact that we need to step up training. We need to help people apply. If there's going to be a foster placement, then a licensure needs to happen at some point. And what a daunting set of activities that can be. Just we talked about forms and making those more simple and user-friendly. So this isn't a lot of money. It's certainly appreciated. We will spend, I don't know how many multiples of this as we go about trying to do our reform efforts, but it's important. And it also, I'll just say to those non-Hennepin County representatives here, which is most of you, I was over at an AMC transportation working group two nights ago, and we were talking about the need for more transportation funding, not surprisingly, but I just pointed out to them that the idea that we can then, you know, take from the general fund, I advertised to them, hey guys, if you haven't gotten into child protection yet, it's coming your way, and get ready, because the numbers are big, and they're big in every county, and they're, of course, biggest in Hennepin. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner, could you just, I do have a member question, but before we get to that, could you just explain why that number, why this particular request? This is the Finance Committee, and I appreciate the background you've given us, but the bill says it's a one-time $75,000 appropriation. And so I know Hennepin has a much bigger budget. This is a huge area. Just could you just kind of explain why that number? And
well, Madam Chair, I would leave that to Representative Neuer. So.
Okay, Representative Neuer.
Madam Chair, I think this is a bill that came before this committee last session, and the reasoning behind it, there's a model that $75,000 in Anoka County that was used to provide to groups who really helped model a good program. So this is just modeling the program that they did to make sure that it can work for Hennepin County. So this is more of a pilot program that will really help Hennepin County expand on that initiative.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this bill. This sounds like a really interesting program. And also thank you for the sambusa, bringing that in. And I would recommend we have like Sambusa Saturdays to attract families to come and learn about the program, because that'd be a good way of doing outreach. My question on the bill has to do with the family incentive options. I have two questions. The first one is, maybe the commissioner can speak to this. What are the top reasons why families have that they maybe don't, or I'm sorry, start over. What would be the top reasons why foster families or prospective foster families would not qualify? When you have people that are interested, do you see a lot of people that just don't meet the qualifications? And can you just speak just to the top reason why? And then the second one on these financial incentives that we're going to be paying to families to become foster parents, is there current statute that prevents Hennepin County from giving families cash incentives or other things to incentivize them to be foster parents?
Yeah.
Commissioner O'Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know the answer to the last question. We can certainly find out about that. I do know that there are stipends paid to foster parents, and where we've had trouble when we go to permanency is that those don't always travel to the adoptive parents, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. So that's something we're working on. And in terms of the foster, the difficulties with it, I may make sure I answer your question now, is we've talked in this committee a lot about there being some remnants in foster care licensing that really don't make a whole lot of sense with, and the one we use often is licensing grandma. So if grandma has a misdemeanor that's 50 years old, but she has a criminal record, there have been cases where that bars her perpetually from being a foster parent. And we don't think that, you know, whatever, a disorderly or something, you know, 10 years in the rearview mirror makes a lot of sense if it's either grandma or an unknown family that end up to be the options for the foster placement.
Representative Munson.
Okay. And then can you just speak to the financial incentives that you would be proposing under this program to pay families? Is that Representative Noor?
Representative Noor.
Madam Chair, the Representative Munson, the incentive is to recruit them so that they can understand. There's a requirement for hours for them to take training, safety training, and so many other things that they have to learn in the process. I don't know if the Commissioner has got more information about the requirement of how many hours they have to take trainings. So that could be part of the recruiting folks, informing them about, you know, providing them the Sambusa Sunday. So the incentive could be that Sambusa on Saturday, that they can come in and have some good training that will help them become foster parents.
Okay. And just, Madam Chair, just to follow up, will there be cash incentives paid to families to be foster parents? Is that in the scope of where it says family incentive options, or that was, it's just not very clear there?
Representative Noor.
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any cash incentives that will be paid to the families.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and Mr. Berg, did you want to make a comment?
Madam Chair, I just to clarify, as Representative North said, we're talking about cash incentives to recruit foster families and kinship families in. The state does run a program, which is called North Star Care, which funds both, makes payments to foster families, kinship assistance, and adoption assistance. That this year is anticipated to spend $77.5 million. It's a forecasted program. But the Representative Noor's bill doesn't change that other than to try to get families to participate in it. Which that's where his incentives are, not the payment of the actual rates under the program.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I've worked on these sort of things in the past. In fact, carried this bill in the past. And, you know, all of our state is dealing with increased diversity, where all of our counties, we've heard, are dealing with the opioid crisis, increased chemical dependency amongst communities, which splits up families, even if it's just temporary while they're in treatment. And the demand for foster placements or temporary placements, sometimes leading to permanent placements, depending on what's going on, has increased, and our ability, though, to convince other people to step up into that really responsible role of being a substitute parent has not really, we haven't paid much attention. And we have an increasingly diverse community. I was told by four older senior social workers in Hennepin County that their number one recruitment source for foster parents was stay-at-home moms. They'd go to their churches, and they felt like they had to contribute financially to the family after their kids left the nest, but felt like they were really good parents, and they would step up. Another issue that we have is not just getting them to think about it, but it's also what we pay for them. The base rate for foster care, I think, is still $22 a day for 24/7 responsibility, and out of that you have to pay any school field trip fees, anything else that the children need. It's a system that, quite honestly, we haven't paid as much attention to. I would assume that the financial incentives in recruitment are things like bus tokens so that you can get downtown to the training, or providing child care for your own children while you're sitting in a training program, or maybe to have your house licensed, you have to have a fire extinguisher on every floor, and helping someone buy a fire extinguisher when that isn't a typical thing in their very limited family budget. And so it's just all those little things that can create barriers for people stepping up to a major set of responsibilities. And I think this is, if we fund this, it will teach us a path that other counties can use to work more effectively with potential foster families. And I appreciate Representative Noor and Commissioner Hennepin and the Hennepin County Board bringing this forward.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Loeffler. Seeing no further discussion, thank you very much, Representative Noor and Commissioner Opat. The bill is laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill.
Yep.
And we will now go to House File 222. And, Yes. And Representative Purcell. And members, we are, the procedure's just a little bit unusual here because we have a second bill that the language didn't quite catch up in a bill form, but it's a bill with the same language, but for a different tribe. And so we thought it would make sense to hear both bills. Both bills are carried by Representative Purcell. So even though we don't actually have the second bill before us, we do have the language. It's the same language, and we just thought for efficiency's sake it made sense to hear them both together. So, and I think Representative Purcell is going to kind of help us understand the landscape here of what we're talking about. So welcome to the committee. Representative Purcell, do you want to go first? And oh, we have to move your bill because you're not a member of the committee, so the chair will move that House File 222 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, member of the committee. And for your accommodation here, we as you know, we've all had our trials and tribulations getting bills numbered coming out of the revisor. So that's why we don't have a number on this other one here. But House File 222, and this just a little bit of background, I've got a lot of help here today. So we're going to try and be succinct, but I do want you to understand what we're trying to do. So going back 2007, the state and tribes in Minnesota, those tribes that wanted to participate embarked on a partnership for American Indian Child Welfare Initiative, and this is I would offer to you, it had some fits and starts because the state was going to provide funding. And as you know, for this effort, a lot of this does fall to the counties. So this is a state effort with the counties, if you will. So when the state hasn't provided funding, then the budget that the counties get kind of out of whack. And you know that's going on in some areas. So what we've got in the bill is a pretty simple ask for $1.6 million for fiscal 2020, and it's for a grant to the, and I'm House File 222, a grant to the Whiter Tribe through Commissioner of Human Services, and I wanted to. I'm not going to talk very long here. I have with me Ms. Laurie York from the White Earth Child Welfare Initiative, their office. And I want to point out, because I've been looking at this a long time myself, and I know we all have, how we're going to make forward progress. And the issue as, and not just, you know, what we keep dealing with, out of home placement, et cetera, and doing the best we can for children. The tribes have a prevention initiative. And, if you haven't heard about it, it's worth hearing about. And I'd like, Ms. York would give us an overview of that, because I think it's something we can all take home and it works. So, without further ado.
Thank you very much, Representative Purcell. Welcome to the committee, and if you would please just say your name and who you work for the record, and then please go ahead and give your information.
My name is Laurie York, and I am the Director of White Earth Indian Child Welfare. So good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for your time. White Earth Indian Child Welfare, along with behavioral health, has positively and significantly impacted the placement of our children by offering culturally specific and voluntary services. With a collaborative approach, we were able to prevent 144 children who would have previously been placed in out-of-home placement who now remain in their parents' care. They didn't enter the child protection system, and they didn't enter the foster care system. out of those 144, so 144 didn't go in, 19 unfortunately did go in, but it still shows an 85% success rate. White Earth Indian Child Welfare has requested additional funding from DHS since 2007 to cover the out-of-home placement costs. That was from the underestimated cost at the beginning of the initiative. Our agency has worked hard on reducing those costs in placement of our children and has successfully done so through the Gija Waso program in collaboration with our Moms in Mass program. But our out-of-home placement costs continue to rise, and without the additional funding for those prevention services, we struggle each year to find the funding to move forward and continue our services. White Earth Nation has saved a lot of money by preventing out-of-home placement of our children by offering those intensive culturally specific services. Our holistic approach is to our families, but most importantly, we've prevented trauma and we've helped those become sober. We're positively changing the generations to come, and we're breaking that cycle of addiction, neglect, and abuse by providing those services. So today I'm here respectfully requesting that the $1.6 million be appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Human Services for a grant to the White Earth Band of Ojibwe for the purpose and delivery of child welfare services, which would be added to the base appropriation.
Thank you very much, Ms. York. Are there other testifiers, Representative Purcell?
We do have for the bill, that we don't have a number for the Leech Lake request as well.
Okay, so
ready to proceed at this time?
Well, let's stick to this one for a moment. And since we have Ms. York here, and I do have a question from Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say thank you to Ms. York and thank you to Representative Purcell for bringing this bill forward. And it feels like just the last few weeks I've been hearing a lot about the work that White Earth is doing and how I think it's just almost undersold and how short that testimony was, the success rates you're seeing and the work you are doing, and that you're actually leading the way in a lot of the work you're doing. And I just want to say that I'm glad this bill is here and we're talking about it, and that I hope that we continue to do this. And I know we'll hear from Leech Lake in a little bit as well about this, but this is really remarkable work.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And I have a question as well, Ms. York, and It is really great that you're here. Thank you for coming down and to talk with us about this. I'm wondering, you talked about how White Earth is saving money on out-of-home placements and you know, reducing trauma and so on. I'm wondering, how are you collecting data or measuring the outcomes for the children? I mean, it's pretty easy to say these would have been placed and we're not placing them and we're saving the money, but right. You know, how are you collecting data on outcomes?
So as an initiative tribe, we do have the SSIS system. So we pull our statistics from our SSIS system. But the way we've been able to do this was to partner with the Moms in the Mats program. And we developed a program called the Gija Waso program, which came from the disparities grant. So we were awarded appropriation for 3 years to do the disparities grant. In that time, we focused on our babies that were coming with withdrawal symptoms out of the hospitals, and what could we do to help that? And so there was the development of the Moms in the Mats program, which was the medicated assistant treatment programming. But it wasn't a dose and go program. It was a program that helped our families find out why they were using in the first place and what tools can we give them to prevent them from using, what natural supports could we provide them with so they weren't system dependent. And then we worked with the child protection team to offer those voluntary services for those cases. A lot of the folks in our voluntary services were moms and dads that were using heroin and methamphetamines and these heavier drugs. We offered them voluntary intensive services with the cultural aspect and component that fit what their needs were, taught them ceremonies and taught them other ways and alternative ways of earning money, such as harvesting wild rice, gathering our natural medicines such as sage, which would help with anger management and those types of things. We've taught them how to do beadwork, which they could go and sell. In turn, it defers them from drug sales. It shows them a different positive way for earning money to pay for their rent and electricity and all of those types of things. So we're identifying their natural supports, their natural environments to veer away from those things that are negative. But the most important and most significant thing is that if you invest the money in the prevention part of it, the parents are now sober. They're learning their cultural backgrounds. It gives them that self of identity, knowing who they are. But our little ones are watching them. And that's where your true generations to come will change the cycle of abuse and addictions. They're now learning their ceremonies, their naming, their culture, their identity. And that helps deter them away from drug use in the future. It teaches them their natural tools to address things like suicide and domestic violence and knowing who you are, self-respect, all of those types of things.
Well, thank you. Actually, that kind of gives me the chills. That sounds really great. And I just one other question that I have, and we have another member has a question, but can you just, so I'm understanding in the bill here where it says for purposes of delivering child welfare services, you're talking about prevention here, not paying for out-home placements, although obviously money can be moved around. But how did you arrive at the number that's in the bill? Is there any special, what is that related to, the 1,600,000 in 2020?
So our out-of-home placement cost is about $4 million a year, and operation is about $7 to $8 million a year. And as we continue to grow, we're trying to take the money for the out-of-home placement, spread it out, and make it more voluntary, more intensive services. Back in 2007, there was one voluntary case. In 2018, we had 48 voluntary cases. They're not just the cases that are easier. They're the intense cases, the drug using cases, things like that. So we're trying to get to where we're more preventative. But like I said, we've always been short that money, and you know we need to have additional funding so we're able to continue our program.
So Ms. York, if I'm understanding, so the 1.6 million is. An amount of shortfall that's been identified in being able to carry out these programs that you very much want to do.
Yes, that's correct. And okay. we pulled the statistics from the statewide social service information system.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Purcell or Ms. York. This sounds like a great program that you've got some really impressive results. But at the beginning, Representative Purcell talked about this being a state partnership with the tribes and the counties, and that how this inadequate state funding had been really a growing burden on the counties as well. And, you know, if you can tell us a little bit about how does this work with state funding, the what remains as a county responsibility, and I understand your program and what you're doing. I'm just not understanding the partnership here.
So the
Ms. York.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
So the initiative is on the reservation boundaries. And within the reservation boundaries, part of Becker County, part of Minowman County, and part of Clearwater County are within that reservation boundaries. We've absorbed their costs, saving those counties that money. So I hope that answers your question. It's kind of like that's where it's that partnership between the county, the tribe, and the state. So we took over those costs for those counties.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That explains the partnership. They've basically delegated to you the work with the residents in your reservation. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Purcell.
Just going back just real brief, and I just want to reiterate for everybody if they didn't hear it, to the metric you were talking about, how are these being measured, the success? And it's children that aren't being out of their home, they're still with their parents. That's the metric.
Right. And Representative Purcell, that piece I think I understood, but the question is also, you know, how well are the children doing? That was kind of more the metric I was looking for. But, I mean, it sounds like you've got that metric as well. It's because, you know, we could say, well, of course, the dilemma in child protection is always, you know, children are being removed or threatened to be removed for a reason, and it's that there's something wrong with the family of origin. And so it's not only are they here or here, it's how well are they doing. And if we can keep them with their families, and we heard Representative Noor's bill about that just before, I mean, that's always better, right, as long as we can make sure that the children do well in that setting. And that's always the challenge. Of course, it sounds like this program is doing that very effectively. So are there other questions for members? Oh, Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. I know this is a finance committee, but I think we also folks need to understand the significance of how important it is that we are keeping these Native children with their families. In 1978, there's federal law came about, the ICWA law, Indian Child Welfare Act, that specifically said you can no longer remove Native American children from their families, nilly-willy, and place them with other people. And the historical context is that Native American children were removed from their families for any reason whatsoever at alarming rates historically for, you know, decades and decades and decades. And there didn't even have to be a good reason. The county could swoop in. There's a phenomenon called the 60s scoop, where counties would literally just go through Indian communities, pick up the kids, put them in foster care, distribute them far away from their family, from their siblings. And that, of course, is a direct correlation to the breakdown of the Native American culture, the family ties, communities, and has created generational historic trauma that families still to this day are continuing to have to deal with. It's a cause for the high use of narcotics and abuse, drug abuse and substance abuse. And I think it behooves us to do whatever we can to support efforts to keep families and kinship together, especially when there are cultural connections that can make it better for not only the children and their parents, but for the general indigenous and county communities as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. That's a great reminder, and I think, you know, we have a history in our country, and especially here in our state, of you know, families were intentionally separated, and when we have that whole history of Native children being put in schools where they were, there was a kind of cultural annihilation, right, a real intent to wipe away their culture. And I do agree that we see a lot of the remainders of that, and that's one of the things that's so exciting about this program and why it gives me chills, because it's very culturally specific and attempts to, if I'm understanding, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, that it attempts to connect people to their roots and to treat them in that context. And apparently that's very effective. So pretty exciting stuff. So thank you very much for your presentation, Ms. York. And so House File 222 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And now we could discuss the next bill that doesn't have a number, because it's...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then, members, when we do get the actual bill, having discussed it already, we will just briefly process it and lay it over for possible inclusion. And, of course, if members have amendments, I assume that they don't, since there weren't any of the previous bill. But, you know, of course, we'll always give an opportunity for that. So please call your next testifier, Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Go ahead there. Welcome to the committee. And Representative Purcell, did you want to introduce this second bill as well? And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So hopefully I'll have this unnumbered bill in front of you. And I think the language is identical, except that it says Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Child Welfare Services, where the other one said White Earth. And it's the same number, and this is to make up for shortfall. And Commissioner of Human Services, Grant to Leech Lake. And I have two testifiers here, the Honorable Farron Jackson, Chairman of the Leech Lake Tribal Council, and Ms. Dawn Ekdahl, the Child Welfare Director for the Leech Lake Band.
All right. Well,
please, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. We're very glad to have you here. And Mr. Chairman Jackson, would you care to introduce yourself, please, for the record, please tell us about the request.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor to be here addressing the committee today on behalf of Leech Lake and our children and families that we serve. You know, I just want to make note, you know, that our reservation is in Minnesota here, and it's, I believe it's the second largest reservation in the state of Minnesota. So, you know, we have a lot of children, you know, involved when we discuss ICWA, both down in our at home on the reservation as well in our urban and outlying suburbs. So I've been a foster parent myself 29 years, you know, through Hennepin County. I was licensed down here when I resided and worked down here in the urban area. And since I'd moved back home, you know, we've adopted 5 children through the process, through where maybe 60 children came through our home during a short and long-term placement, respite care, and it was a real blessing to meet these children and to kind of be able to provide shelter and a safe, secure place for them. And the rewards were both ways, you know, when through this process that I'm speaking about here. My wife wanted to adopt these children, and I couldn't say no, because I'm a family man too, you know. So we're still doing that today, you know. And I try to tell her now, you know, I said, honey, I said, we're getting up there a little bit. We'll be 80 years old and still providing care for these children, but there are children now. So we kind of keep it to the 5 children that we adopted, as you know, and plus our 5 biological children we were blessed with as well. So I always stay very much involved with ICWA. You know, and I'm thankful that we have Dawn Ekdahl here. She's kind of hit the ground running, and she's kind of really been a really active and director here, and we're really thankful she's here. And I'm just here today to kind of give her some support and just be physically supportive of Dawn. So I turn it over to our Leech Lake ICWA director, Dawn Ekdahl.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Ekdahl, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Bonjour, Dawn Ekdahl, Indigenous. I introduce myself in the language of Leech Lake people. We're Ojibwe. They are Ojibwe. I'm non-native. I came into this work approximately 20 years ago when I became a foster parent, and the very first child I had came from our Chairman Jackson's community in Onigum, and I was really excited for a 16-year-old, and I couldn't wait to adopt him. And I found out that you can't do that, really. And I've been on a 20-year journey understanding that, and through the process, I was a foster parent and adopted 7 children, 5 of which are my kin. I worked for Leech Lake approximately 2011-2013, and during that time, I lost my nephew, who was 20 years old, to methamphetamines. And I was at work that day. And the only way I believe I was able to heal is because the community wrapped their arms around me and they showed me a different way of healing and a different way of being. And I knew I was always going to be a part of Leech Lake. And so I went off to the university and got my degree at University of Minnesota Duluth. I was mentored by a community member, Dr. Priscilla Day, who taught me a lot about Indian child welfare, not just in Minnesota, but around the whole country. And I was honored to work there at UMD for 4 years in the Center for Regional Tribal Child Welfare Studies. Built a lot of good relationships, and I knew I was going back to Leech Lake because I knew they really needed some help. So to understand the Tribal Child Welfare Initiative, I think it's really important to understand that the 11 tribes in Minnesota, 2 of them have entered into a grant with the state of Minnesota starting in 2007. It was calculated. That money hasn't changed nor increased to run the program. We currently have 50 employees in our program. We have family preservation, truancy, child protection, intake and assessment. We have a fabulous program of people. We also have an urban office. Of that money, and here's where we're at Finance Committee, we've always been in a deficit in child welfare. We've been working really hard, incredible employees who have been there a long time. About 20% of them have been there over 5 years, and we're working really hard to do this, but we really don't have the funds. It costs about $7.5 million a year to run our program, and to help you understand how that happens is approximately 8 grants do fund our program. Of those 8 grants, one of them is the initiative, which is approximately $2.4 million. The other grants are approximately $160,000 or less. So if you do the math, they barely add up to $1 million. And so the rest of that has to be generated from revenue, and that revenue mostly comes from some reimbursements that we get from the state, which are difficult to get because all of our data has to be entered correctly, and we have a lot of problems sometimes with our data, with our workforce. We have a shortage of our workforce. A lot of that is because we can't compete with the wages in our county. Our surrounding counties, we have 4 counties, our surrounding counties pay their workers approximately $4 to $6 more an hour than we can even pay our workers. Our workers haven't had increase in wages in years because we don't have the 2.5% increase that we can give them. So the way we need to generate that money is through targeted case management dollars, meaning our case managers need to go visit with the children and make contact. It makes it really extremely difficult to do that when you are a case manager and you're managing 20 to 25 families and up to 50 children on your caseload, and you need to see each child at least one time a month. So that generated revenue, and our workers are working about 50% of their time entering data, and so they're not spending the time in the field that they need. We have a significant workforce shortage. We need more people. We need to pay our workforce more, and we need to be able to pay our foster homes. I think it's really important to understand when we pay for foster care, we also, when we use any agency, Kindred, there's North Palms, different foster care agencies charge us an administration fee on top of our actual placement fee. So we're paying a placement fee, and almost twice as much sometimes we have to pay in administration fees on top of the foster care reimbursement. So we may be reimbursed up to 83% of our other home placement costs, though we don't get it reimbursed for all of those, the high cost of all the administration fees that we're paying. So we also have our own foster care department, have approximately 100 homes that we have licensed. We don't charge administration fees to other agencies who do use our homes, because that does happen. And that's something we're looking at doing too. So, and internally, we're working really hard applying for grants and piecemealing people's positions together so we can keep people. We would love a cultural coordinator. They have a wonderful culture coordinator in White Earth. I just started my position 6 months ago. But since then, I've taken 14 of my lead staff over to White Earth, and we've learned a lot about what they've been doing in White Earth, so we can also do some of the same work, especially around their cultural programming, which we really need, but we just do not have the funds to be able to do what they do.
Thank you, long-winded. Ekdahl. And there's a question from Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers and to bring these two bills forward. This is just really fascinating to me, just the success rates and the approach you have to child welfare, and it's really wonderful, and I think something we should spend more time on because of just how well you're doing in this regard. So just to understand a little bit, you said in 2007, two tribes went into these agreements, and so I assume that would be White Earth and Leech Lake, being these two bills have come forward. Maybe I'm going to ask you for things that are well without of the purview here. So does this mean other that requests like this would be unique to Leech Lake and White Earth to be able to ask for these kinds of funds to go to these things, or would other tribes be able to do that even though they're not in these contracts with the counties?
Ms. Ekdahl?
From my understanding, I'm looking over at our state partners. From my understanding, just Leech Lake and White Earth were granted the initiative grants. Mille Lacs and Red Lake had pursued it, but it hasn't been accepted over the years. And the other tribes do not have the same, they're not afforded the same grant through the initiative, unless they were to sign into an agreement.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add to that, that there are parts of our state where there are tribes and counties don't get along so good, so that's got something to do with it.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this goes beyond just the scope, but it's really interesting, and I really appreciate these bills coming forward and to be able to possibly pursue funding some things that we know are very successful, so thank you.
Yeah, and I do have a question for you, Ms. Ekdahl, or maybe for Representative Purcell. So between the two tribes, I know the requests are the same. What's the relative size of the various populations that are being served here, or the probably more importantly, the child protection problem, or the number of children who are being served here? Are they roughly equivalent?
Through our initiative, I should know these numbers. I don't know if I know the exact numbers of what we're serving at this time. It changes so often. 250. I don't want to give any wrong numbers, so I'm not positive about that.
So for our waiters
and Ms. York, right? Please sit down. Come on back to the microphone.
So for 2018, waiters received 785 intakes, 584 child maltreatment reports. We did 48 voluntary services. There were 426 adults served and 450 children served, with 328 open for assessment and case management.
Okay, and then Ms. Ekdahl, are your numbers, it sounds like they might be a bit lower than that.
Our numbers are, well, this is a good question. I don't know the exact numbers that she has. I should have been more prepared with that. I know we had 211 families in assessment, 76 of them received prenatal services, and 219 families were, out-of-home placement didn't happen because it went to family preservation. I don't have the other numbers on me, though.
That's fine, Ms. Ekdahl. So I guess I would just ask if you can get that information later, maybe each of you, if you could email that to us, and then we can distribute it to all the members. I think it's important to us for us to understand so that we can, if in a perfect world we would just love to fulfill your requests, but, I'm anticipating that we will – I should say expecting that our budget's going to be pretty tight, and so just in order for us to understand, where the need is most and so on, it would be helpful to have that. Ms. York?
Yeah, so
here, just
about a month ago, DHS did ask Leech Lake and Whiters to provide budgets, and so when we did that and we looked at what it would cost to operate, we did do them independently, and that at another meeting where both Don and I were, we found that our numbers were very similar for cost to operate, and that's where she came up with the 7.5, and I said between 7 and 8 million, because that was what we came up with the budget when we laid out staff and attorney and positions and out-of-home placement costs and the prevention services all together was between 7 and 8 million per tribe. Now, the 2.3 that we began with, or Leech Lake 2.4, if you added on that 1.6 or that to each of those, it would bring us closer to covering the out-of-home placement costs, which would be $4 million. The other $4 million, we come up with other ways to pay for the program to run and operate.
Okay, great. Thank you. And if you have that, whatever you provided to DHS with those budget, that I think that might be helpful to us. So thank you very much for your testimony. We don't have the bill before us, but as I said, when we do get the language, which I expect will be fairly sooner when we get the bill, we will include that. We'll bring it back up. You don't need to come back again, but probably Representative Purcell will be here, and we will, and of course you're welcome to come on that day if you so choose, but we'll schedule the bill when it comes, and then our expectation will be to lay it over for possible inclusion in our division bill. So. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. We're going to go to House File 795, Representative Becker Finn. All right. Representative Becker Finn, welcome back.
Thank you.
And the chair will move House File 795 to bring it before the committee, and this will also be laid over for possible inclusion in our bill. And Representative Haley, you had a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Can I ask a clarifying question about the process with that previous proposal?
Yes.
So we don't have a bill. We didn't have a bill to review. can you maybe explain, I'm assuming that's not our standard course of procedure, and then
right.
what are we going to be doing next when we actually can review a bill?
Right. So, Representative Haley, the reason we did that is because the two bills are identical in language, except for one's for one tribe and one is for the other. So because we didn't have the other one yet, it just made more sense to hear them both at the same time to give members context and understand what we're talking about. But because we don't have the one of those bills, when we do have it, we'll bring it before the committee. We'll notice it. We just won't go through what we just all we went through today. But if members have amendments they want to offer, there will be an opportunity, just like in a regular bill hearing. We probably will just have Representative Purcell here when the bill is here and not ask his testifiers to all come back because we've had a full opportunity today. So it's just for efficiency's sake and because we didn't have that bill number. Generally speaking, we try to avoid doing that, but sometimes that's happened sometimes just because of the slowness sometimes of getting the actual bill. So does that clear it up for you? Okay. So Representative Becker Finn, welcome to the committee. If you would like to begin and explain about your bill and maybe introduce your testifier.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's a pretty straightforward bill. I think it's two sentences. So it's we did leave the appropriation blank because we recognize that we don't know exactly what the budget targets are going to look like and would, you know, leave that up to the judgment of the chair and the committee. So it would appropriate money, one-time money, to the Ombudsperson for American Indian Families for training and education for American Indian families regarding child protection laws. And I just wanted, and this has been mentioned a little bit today, but I did want to give a little background for context of why this is important. So there's a long history both in Minnesota and in the United States of enacting policies that disproportionately harm Native families and particularly Native children. That history goes back to first contact and, you know, has continued and is admittedly complex as you're dealing with over 500 Native nations and different federal administrations over the centuries. And, of course, it's not a part of our history that's typically covered in your average high school textbook of American history. I would venture to guess that most of you here in this room are not familiar with the termination era or the assimilation era or, you know, the name Richard Pratt means something to Native folks that probably doesn't mean much to non-Native folks. And I'll kind of get to that. So most directly related to that was the practice of taking Native children from their families, enforcing them, you know, often to attend boarding schools. Richard Pratt is well known as the person, so the quote of his was that they needed to kill the Indian to save the man. And so that was the accepted federal policy, government policy, and how to treat Native kids and their families. So that folks don't think, oh, that was a long time ago, we didn't know much, you know, back in the day. The boarding school era was really not that long ago. My own grandmother was a victim of that, and my family continues to kind of bear the ramifications of what that meant for our family, and I know that's true. I don't know a Native family who hasn't been impacted by the issue of losing children. As mentioned previously, in the 1970s, there was finally kind of a reckoning as far as at the time there was up to 35% of Native American children were in some kind of out-of-home placement or foster care. So that's kind of across the board of the entire population of Native kids in our country. And so that's really what was the impetus for the Indian Child Welfare Act for ICWA in 1978. I'm not going to describe ICWA in detail because it's complex. It's complicated. You could take an entire class in law school on ICWA. We have lawyers who specialize in that and spend, you know, years really becoming experts in that area of the law. And so if we have something that complex, many of our families don't necessarily know their rights in that context. So if you layer the history, the federal law, the state law, different tribal laws, on top of the families having experienced trauma, often in recovery or have limited resources, it's kind of a challenging and unique situation where it's really hard to make sure that the rights of both the families and their children are upheld. And so that's kind of the unique circumstances that we're in and why this particular type of funding is being requested. And so, and also to that, I do want to kind of acknowledge Chairman Jackson for being here and how important that is, and make folks kind of realize that that is the chairman of our tribe who came here, and that's how important that issue and these issues are to Leech Lake and all of our different tribal nations here. And then I did want to mention, too, that we have Tribal Sovereignty Day coming up on Monday, and the public will be welcome to learn from that, too. And I think that will kind of help inform bills like this going forward. So my testifier is Jill Esch. She's the current ombudsperson for American Indian Families. She'll be providing testimony, and also we had some written testimony from impacted families who weren't able to physically be here. If all the things I just listed also make it really hard to travel down to the Twin Cities in the middle of the week and wait around for a committee hearing to give testimony in person. And we don't currently have the ability for, testifying by phone or video. And so we do have some of those stories were included in your packets and will be reviewed by Ms. Esch as well. So thank you,
Madam All right. Chair. Thank you, Representative Becker-Fannin. So members do have copies of the written testimony as well. And I just kind of glancing through here, I look forward to reading these in detail. But welcome to the committee, Ms. Esch, and please introduce yourself for the record and give us
your name. My name is Jill Kehalani Esch. Aloha and good afternoon. I am Native Hawaiian. I am the ombudsperson for American Indian Families. I'm here today to ask for your support for House Bill 795, appropriating monies from the general fund specifically earmarked for education and training to American Indian children, American Indian families on child protection laws. Shortly after I started in this role in November of 2013, I was at a meeting and the discussion was about the number of American Indian children who were in foster care. I said that we needed to explore ways to prevent children from being placed in foster care. I went on to say we need to think outside the box. Matt Thornhill from Red Lake was at that meeting. He was a Hennepin County social worker at that time. He corrected me and said, no, Jill, we don't think outside the box. We think outside the circle. Then we bring them into the circle to strengthen the circle. So that is what I've been trying to do, bringing ideas and stakeholders into the circle so that we can strengthen the circle. But I wanted to go a little further and to duplicate the circle around the state of Minnesota. This is where each of you as legislators can help to strengthen the circle and to help duplicate the circle around our beautiful state of Minnesota, to help prevent more children from being placed in foster care. And if they're in foster care, to place them with relatives and then return them home sooner because it is safe to do so. Minnesota is number one in the nation for the removal of American Indian children. Having lived in Minnesota for over 19 years, I know how much Minnesotans like being number one, but not for this statistic. Can you imagine how excited our state would be if the Twins, Vikings, or the Wild were number one in the nation? But there should be no pride in being number one for removing American Indian children from their homes. There are 18 American Indian children being removed to one white child. The American Indian population makes up less than 2% of our total population. But in the foster care system, American Indians make up just under 1/4 of the children who are in foster care. In thinking about prevention, how to possibly stop more children from being in foster care, or if they were in foster care, to get them placed with relatives and then ultimately reunified with their families when it was safe to do so, I decided one way was to educate the families on the law. I'm a licensed attorney, having graduated from Willie Mitchell in 2003, and then later on went to work clerk for a judge in Hennepin County, then moved to Duluth, where I practiced law for several years, but then moved back to the Twin Cities because I did not especially like doing asbestos insurance defense litigation. So while I am a licensed Minnesota attorney, I'm not the attorney for anyone who contacts me, but I can provide legal information and resources. That is what I started doing a few years ago around the state, monitoring the counties to make sure that they were following the law, conducting investigations, having meetings, and then always scheduling a talking circle so that I could educate families on the Indian Child Welfare Act and the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. At first, there were only a handful of members from the community who would attend. But then, as word got out that I was having another talking circle, more people started to show up. I then started getting requests from other communities up north and down south to ask me to come and educate the families and community members so they could understand the child protection laws. Communities where I previously gave talking circles have asked if I could come more often because more people want to learn. Once a month, I go to the Shakopee Correctional Facility to educate mothers of Native children on the law. The talking circle I present is about 2 hours long and provides information and resources on the Indian Child Welfare Act, the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act, and the importance of the parents being engaged to work a case plan so that ultimately the children can be reunified with their families. And most important, I stress to the parents that they must show up at court so default is not taken against them. I encourage them to keep moving forward in their case plans and to not give up. As professionals, we attend seminars all the time to learn new information. But there's nothing for families who are in child protection. Mothers, fathers, grandparents, relatives want to learn, but there is nothing out there. We need to get more information and resources to them, but it needs to be presented in a good way. I have found that my mailing resources to them is not the best, but my meeting with them in person and going over the resources is a much better way. This is what I attempt to do with my talking circles. Just to give you some background on the purpose of House Bill 795, the Office of Ombudspersons for Families has 4 ombudspersons who work with the minority communities. Ann Hill works with the African American community, Bao Nangchu works with the Asian Pacific community, Miro Gubasa works with the Hispanic speaking community, and I work with the American Indian community. While there are 4 of us and the work we do is specific to the communities we serve, the way our budget is appropriated, we only receive 1 allocation from the general fund to manage and run our entire independent agency. The 4 ombudspersons need to agree on how we spend our budget. I'm asking you today to specifically earmark additional monies from the general fund for education and training for American Indian families on the child protection laws. I'm asking for support of Bill 795. I invite all of you to come into the circle so that we can strengthen the circle and together we can duplicate the circle around the state. Let's help our American Indian families learn the law so that they too can come into the circle to strengthen the circle and they can help to duplicate the circle. Minnesota does not want to be number 1 in the nation for the removal of American Indian children. As I shared with you, Minnesota has 18 American Indian children being removed to 1 white child. Nebraska is number 2 in the nation, with 8 American Indian children being removed to 1 white child. So Minnesota is more than double the number 2 spot in the nation for the removal of American Indian children. I have 3 testifiers who prepared testimony for you today. Unfortunately, they could not attend in person and ask that I read their testimonies to you. In the interest of time, I'd like to read 2 of them to you. The 3rd testimony you already have before you in materials I dropped off earlier this week. It's titled A Father's Story. I received permission from the father who wrote that story, and he said he would be honored and thrilled for me to share his name. His name is Curtis Jackson, a Leech Lake father. His very powerful and inspiring story talks about what he had to do to endure going through the child protection process. It was an uphill battle for him because he was not the custodial parent. In Minnesota, if mother and father are not married when the child is born, custody is awarded to the mother. For a father to receive parenting time, the father needs to go to family court. So when a child is removed from the home by child protection, the agency, county, is working towards reunifying the child with the custodial parent, which is generally the mother. I hope you will have find time to read a father's story so you can get a glimpse on how fathers are treated in child protection cases. I strongly believe fathers need to become more involved in their child protection case, but they need to learn the law. If we had more time, I could share with you stories from other fathers, fathers who, like Curtis Jackson, ultimately had custody transferred to them. In the handouts that I provided, there are three other stories, one written by an incarcerated mother and two stories from grandmothers. One grandmother from Ponima, that's on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, and another grandmother from Carlton. With Madam Chair's permission, I'd like to read the brief one-page testimonies from Whitney Parkhurst and Lori Timlin, who could not attend in person to present their testimonies. If there are any questions, I would gladly answer them after reading these two short testimonies.
Okay, well, I think we have time. We have about 15 minutes left. I do want to give members an opportunity to ask questions. So maybe we could just pause right here and have a few questions if anybody has any. I don't know if they do. And then we could go into reading the testimony, and then probably we'll have more time at the end as well. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Esch, thank you for your presentation today, and congratulations for finding a program that is starting to show some results. I'm just curious about the blank appropriation we have here, and just what your intent is. What would be, what are you looking for that appropriation? What would be something that would be helpful? Is it scalable? Just what you're looking for there. And then what part of the budget of that of the OBFF do you get that's just for yours? I know the four of you have to agree on your portion of it, but what is your portion of that currently? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Ms. Esch.
So for the appropriation, we're looking at like $50,000 for it because of the cost that it takes for traveling, you know, going up to Bemidji as to how long it takes, and then getting a hotel room for that. And that is... it all depends as to how many talking circles and where I've had it. When I was there in December, I had talking circles in Bemidji, Leech Lake, and Hinckley, all within, you know, 1 week. And so the cost with everything for that was close to about $1,000 with it for, you know, for meals and everything. The Office of Ombudspersons for Families, we have a budget that I think last year was $460,000, and we received $92,000 from DHS annually. And so that is to take care of the salaries and the office expenses. And in addition to that, we have, but I spend the most money in the office regarding travel because of where the families are with it. So I hope I've answered your question on that.
Thank you. Representative Schumacher?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yep. Representative Becker-Pan.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Representative Schumacher and members, you know, keep in mind if you've ever looked at the map of where our tribal communities are, I mean, ideally we'd be serving all of our tribal communities, and, you know, Grand Portage is quite the drive to get up to Grand Portage. And some of our other communities are pretty spread out. And I think, and then to your other question, I think part of the idea is that instead of disproportionately pulling funds that have to be split between everybody else, that then some of those things could be paid with these funds instead of impacting the other ombudspersons.
Okay, thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you so much for this bill. When you look at the Office of the Ombudsperson for Families, and we look at the disparities within the Native American community, but also in the African American community, it is huge. you know, the impact is hitting those two communities in a really big way. But yet we have one person in the office to support the state, which is really not doable. You know, so I'm just wondering, you know, if we can find a way to support these ombudspersons so that we can increase the staff in the process. So do you, you know, I mean, it's awesome to see that you're traveling all around the state yourself. But quite frankly, you need like 2, 4, 5 more you to do this work and to do it in a really effective way. Can you speak to that in any way?
Ms. Ash.
So we have a separate bill, House Bill number 796, regarding separating out the Ombudsperson for American Indian Families, because in March of 2015, the Governor's Task Force had a recommendation to restructure the Office of Ombudspersons for Families and have it Ombudspersons for Children and Families. Because our office, while we represent certain communities, if a white family calls, we are on a rotating basis. So like I think last week I was on for white calls that come in with that. But Indian Affairs Council did a resolution in 2015 and says because we work with the Indian Child Welfare Act and the different laws that the others don't work with, to separate out, and that is another bill that is going through, that has been presented with that, and for that we are seeking to have an assistant and an investigator with it. But I do, you know where you're coming from. While I'm the Ombudsperson for American Indian Families for the state of Minnesota, if there's any child protection case and the family resides in Minnesota, but the tribe is in Alaska, there's 573 federally recognized tribes. So if you look at my latest report that I gave to Indian Affairs Council, you'll see the various different tribes that I've worked with, along with states, people calling me from like North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Alaska, because that family lives here. But yeah, there is not enough staff in the office for us to do the work that we need to do.
Representative Moran. I agree. The crises that are happening in definitely in the Native American community and African American community, really, you know, I think often in this body, when we look at solutions, we look like we have to just make everything even and fair. And there are greater needs in some areas than in others. And we really need to have support staff to really effectively work to ensure that we're educating communities, empowering communities, helping them to navigate through the system for the purpose of reunification and do it properly and know the consequences of that. But the strain of one individual doing that can be huge. So my hope is that we can do better to really support the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Representative Moran. And just I just have a question kind of following on Representative Schumacher's question, just to be sure I understand the request. Ms. Esch, so you're not requesting additional personnel. You're just asking for some basically expenses to be covered for you to be able to do outreach that you feel is really important to do.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. I have Representative Munson, and then we could go ahead and read the.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was reading the information in this pamphlet, so thank you for that. I like the graph on this chart, although I think the color coding is a little culturally insensitive. But I wanted to ask a question. Why is the Hispanic race called out separately and outside of the 100% of the others? Is there a reason why? Is it separate funding or?
Madam Chair, we're not able to answer that question. I mean, I'm not here on behalf of the Ombudsperson Office, and we don't even have that piece of paper in front of us. I'm not even sure exactly what you're referencing.
Representative Munson.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that the funding was including Hispanic outreach too, because that's one of your Ombudsman staff. So I was just wondering why that was called out separately, but if you don't know that reason, then
This bill is...
Ms. Esch.
Thank you. This bill is only for working with American Indian families, educating them on the child protection law. So I've brought with me the various different resources that I work with families on. And so the other ombudspersons, they don't have the Indian Child Welfare Act. They don't have the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. So things are very different, and the laws are very different. And so that's why it's important to educate the families so that families know what their rights are. So when a child protection worker comes and says, I'm going to remove your child because your child is not doing his homework, and I'm going to ask the court to terminate your parental rights, and I've had a case like that up north, that family knows what their rights are under the Indian Child Welfare Act. They're supposed to be working on active efforts as opposed to reasonable efforts. They're supposed to be working with the tribes and the other ombudspersons. They don't have those laws.
Okay.
And I'd like to turn to either Ms. Sunderman, maybe. Did you want to kind of try to answer Representative Munson's question?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Munson. I think, and I wasn't involved in drafting this or anything, but I think Hispanic, with the parentheses of any race, is because within the greater Hispanic classification, there are different racial designations within that. So that's why it's separated like that.
Okay, thank you very much. So Representative Becker-Finn, and we just have 7 minutes left, so I want to be able to get to the letters.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Just want to make it clear that the point of this bill and the goal of this bill is not to take anything away from any of the other ombudspersons or any offices or there certainly are unique circumstances in each of those, but in particular, as mentioned by Ms. Esch, just the layering of different tribal laws and federal laws is particularly complicated for families to understand.
Okay, thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. Ms. Esch, if you'd like to go ahead and read some of the testimony, please.
So this testimony is from Lori Timlin to Legislative Committee. I am the parenting coordinator at the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Shakopee. As you may be aware, despite comprising only 1.1% of the total population of Minnesota, American Indian women constitute 26% of the population of women incarcerated at Shakopee. Many of these women have had involvement with county and tribal courts, child protection agencies, CHIPS cases, and have lost custody of or their parental rights to their children. Unfortunately, many of the women who contact me for assistance in regaining custody of their children or complying with a case plan do not understand what took place in court. I have been dismayed to observe that the Indian Child Welfare Act is not always understood by agencies and courts, and on occasion is not adhered to. I've developed a working relationship with Jill Kehalani Esch, who has generously provided phone time, professional visits, and monthly in-service workshops for the women here. Because of her, these women now have a process and have received the education and resources necessary to understand their court process and can begin to advocate for themselves. Jill has also educated me and has been accessible to provide clarification or additional legal understanding. I can think of three women in particular who had life-changing contact with Ms. Esch. One woman was on the verge of having her parental rights terminated. After consulting with Ms. Esch, it was determined the court had never identified her child's case as falling under the Indian Child Welfare Act. That information resulted in the mother retaining custody. A second case involved a mom with severe addiction issues, but no history of maltreatment of her children. With the education by Ms. Esch, she was able to connect with her tribal representative and made a compelling case for the court to reconsider reunification. This case is still in the process. Lastly, a mother had numerous contacts with Ms. Esch, receiving understanding, coaching regarding how to effectively present herself to the court, and becoming familiar with the Indian Child Welfare Act. The court agreed there was compelling reason to deviate from the pending termination of parental rights.
She and I both agree that because of this relationship, she is approximately 3 weeks away from being released from Shakopee and having her child returned to her custody. Ms. Esch is an extremely hardworking and energetic person, but I believe the demand for her services is significant enough that were her department to receive additional funding and staff, they would be kept busy. Please feel free to call upon me if I can provide additional information. Lori Timlin, Parenting Coordinator at Shakopee. This last testimony is from a mother. Her case is not in child protection, and she is doing everything that she can to keep her child from being removed from the home. My name is Whitney Parkhurst. I am honored to provide testimony on the importance and full support of House Bill 795 and would encourage this committee to vote in favor of the bill and move this bill along. I'm sorry that I could not attend in person to present my testimony. When I first contacted Jill, the ombudsperson for American Indian Families, I had very little knowledge of the American Indian Child Welfare Act. I knew it was designed to protect Native children and families, protect our heritage and best interests, but I didn't know how. Jill provided me with information and resources, and with these tools, I educated myself on the law. If I needed clarification or had any questions, Jill was happy to help. I am now confident in my knowledge and can better advocate for myself. Jill's role is very important because many parents and families don't know their rights. Often, Native children are placed out of the home in non-Native homes and foster care before active efforts are made. Two-thirds of the Native population in foster care is placed by child welfare agencies. Sometimes it does more harm than good. A lot of this could be avoided if we came together and had proper knowledge on the laws and protocols under the American Indian Child Welfare Act. Having an open child protection case is an uphill battle, and I will be forever grateful for the knowledge I inherited, thanks to this amazing woman, Jill Esch. She goes above and beyond for the people who contact her and is so caring and passionate about what she does. I wish more people knew about Jill and the work that she does because she has helped me find the keys to unlock many doors and windows. In the resources that Jill provided me with, I read that one of the purposes of the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act is to, quote, preserve the Indian family and tribal identity, including an understanding that Indian children are damaged if family and child tribal identity and contact are denied. Indian children are the future of the tribes and are vital to their very existence, end quote. I am full support of House Bill 795. My hope is that House Bill 795 is voted in favor by this committee so that eventually it will become law so that Jill can help educate even more families who have American Indian children. Thank you, Whitney Parkhurst, a mother and a member of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Esch, and thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. It's been a very interesting discussion, and I'm not seeing any more questions. So with that, the bill is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.